Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Welcome back, everyone, to the final episode of the GeoMob Podcast of 2025. We are almost to the new year, and this is our final session for this year, Stephen, you and I.
Wow, another year ground on or flown past, whichever way you look at it. But great to be here for the last time in 25 and looking forward to 26.
Well, let's start immediately with our call to action here, because you have something you wanted to share with the listeners.
Yes, so people who follow Mappery and look out for their maps in the wild every day will know that we try and publish a series of seasonal maps in the wild between Christmas and New Year's. And at the time of recording, I'm still looking out for a really great map in the wild with a New Year's Eve theme. So if you're listening to this and you think, I've got just the picture for that, then send it in to me at maps@mappery.org. You'll find it on the website. You can use the Mastodon channel, the Blue Sky channel, however you want to, but send it to me and you might be surprised and see your picture on the website in a couple of days' time.
Very nice. Very nice. A good good call to action for anyone to start off the new year.
One last thing. Do not invent something using artificial intelligence, because they're just horrible and I don't want them on the site.
Oh, wow. Okay. Throwing down the gauntlet. You mean people are going to actually have to think? This is...
I want real pictures, yeah.
You know what, Stephen? Then maybe I should dive right into my update for OpenKit of what we've been up to since we last spoke. Because this actually... I knew, of course, we would be recording this episode, kind of looking back, and that did get me thinking, you know, the last couple of months... I've been trying to thinking a bit about our kind of positioning with OpenKit, and particularly obviously with AI, you know, here. And I've had numerous people ask me of like, you know, aren't I worried that AI is going to replace geocoding and stuff like that? Which, to be fair, I'm not worried. But and one thing that has, anyway, this has got me thinking, and that the real value in the service that we provide, it's not that we've set up the geocoding service and, you know, we gather all the open data, because all of that anyone can do themselves. And probably AI has made that a bit simpler to a degree, but this is one of the challenges I see with AI, is that everyone thinks, AI definitely makes it simpler to do things, but it makes it harder to maintain things. And this is what the value that we provide, is the maintenance. And so many of the projects that we've been working on the last couple of months are exactly that kind of grinding maintenance, you know, of keeping everything up to date, keeping the libraries up to date, keeping adding kind of, you know, an obscure data source here or obscure. I mean, we had a project where we now added postcodes for, you know, in Germany, of PO boxes.
Right.
So, which are not, you know, it's not really assigned to a building per se. It's more assigned to like the post office for a certain region, but people still want to know where that is. And, like things like that. So, you know, this is a very niche use case, only in one country. And that's kind of been our bread and butter the last kind of, you know, let's say 6 months, adding the tests, debugging the obscure bug that the customer complains about. And so I don't have any amazing new features or AI wizardry to report, but in some ways I think, you know, this is the value of our service, and this is something AI can't do and won't do. So I don't know. I just wanted to kind of reflect on that a bit. So
I think also there are things that AI does really well. I think if you want to summarize several bits of content, it does it pretty well. If you want to summarize, summaries, it does well. Text, it sometimes does okay. But when you're actually trying to create things or complex things, I'm not convinced at all. You know, and I think with what you do in geocoding, and I had a background in geocoding. It's now over 20 years ago, but still I had a background in geocoding. The whole concept of an address and understanding addresses in 200 plus different countries where things are not the same is challenging for us, and I think is almost impossible for AI.
Well, it's also challenging given that, you know, the data sets that we're working for are by definition incomplete and changing all the time. And so yes, it is very challenging. And that's exactly the challenge that we solve for our customers.
And that's exactly the reason why lots of customers pay you money every month to use a service that is maintained, that is updated. You know, they could do it themselves. Lots of them have got the tech skills to do it themselves. They just don't want to do that, and they don't want to develop all that niche knowledge and constantly looking for new sources.
The other problem, we've also spent a lot of time, you know, not just in the last couple of months, but for years now, of, you know, we have SDKs in so many different languages, and every one of those languages, you know, there are new versions and new libraries, and they always need to be maintained and new best practices. And this is one I still grab, and we do that work, and we're continually publishing in some languages. We're publishing the SDKs in other languages. We're fortunate that some customers, you know, we can't be experts in every single language, but you know, we still grapple with this issue. We see more and more users who don't, you know, their instinct, especially younger AI kind of developers, is more just like, oh, well, I'll just have the AI write a script for me, right? And the AI will write a script for you, but it won't be the battle-tested script that our SDK is, that in some cases have been, you know, fine-tuned and deals with every edge case. And I'm not sure how to solve that, to be honest, of how to better encourage people to not just blindly go to the AI, but instead use the open source SDK that we've worked on. But that's going to be one for 2026, I guess. I don't think we're going to solve that this year.
So. I think we're just all of us who work or live in the tech community are on a journey with AI, and people are going to have to go through the hype cycle. They're going to have the trough of disillusionment or whatever it's called, because it doesn't work or the code's broken or whatever it is they're trying to do. And then they're going to work out that actually this is a really useful tool, but I need to understand its limits. Right. I can't use a hammer to drill holes. And if I try and use a hammer to put screws into the wall, I'm going to make one heck of a mess. But, you know,
yeah. Yes, I agree. We're on that journey, and it's challenging also because the hammer is changing shape every week, you know. So, anyway, Stephen, since we last spoke, we have had several very good GeoMob events that I wanted to recap. I had the pleasure of attending. I had the pleasure. We've had many events. We had an event in Belgium. We had an event in Edinburgh. That, by all accounts, both of those were excellent events. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend them, but I did attend our event at the end of November in Berlin, and then in early December in Barcelona. So maybe we can quickly go through those, because both of them were great. First up, Berlin. We had the pleasure of being hosted by our friends at HERE,
right,
at their office, which is a great location, right kind of in Mitte. I should also mention the day before the day before was GIS Day, and they had a company internal event, which I had not quite appreciated this, but here's massive. I mean, here's 8,000 people, they told me.
Wow.
I honestly didn't get the scale of it quite. And Berlin is one of the major offices, and they they invited me to come speak at this company internal event. And so I had a one hour slot or a 45 minute slot about GeoMob, about what is GeoMob. And it was great. It was really cool. a lot of people showed up, a lot of good questions, and hopefully I got many of them. Then the following day came, attended the GeoMob, which we had at here. And I'm quite hopeful that we're going to get some talks in the future from more people from here. And we're going to, let's see how we can get them more involved with GeoMob, be it in Berlin, be it in other cities. Let's see.
Great.
So
sounds like Berlin is going to become the new flagship city of GeoMob.
Well, you know, we did discuss this. I would say at this point, Berlin is, at the very least, it's the equal of GeoMob London, if not already bigger in terms of attendance. It's interesting. In Berlin, we have a lot of, at GeoMob now, we have a lot of startups. There are a lot of people doing very interesting things, and we've had several interesting talks also from kind of the academic community. Whereas, I don't know, I feel like in London, we have a, maybe because it's been going longer, we have more of a mix at this point, you know, of also government people or, I don't know. So maybe we still need to work on the blend in Berlin, but yes, very cool. Very, very interesting things going on. A lot of people, I don't think it's any secret that OpenStreetMap is very big in Germany. And so a lot of people working around that. We had a very interesting talk by a company called Kale.ai, which I don't know why they named that, but they specifically are doing routing for cycle couriers.
Right.
Okay, so I don't know how much of a thing this has become in London, but in Berlin and in other cities as well, you start to see more and more, A, there are a lot of cycle lanes and also kind of like, let's say, restricted streets that are kind of slow traffic streets that where cycles get priority. And you start to see more and more of these kind of delivery cycles. You know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like
two wheels at the back, one at the front.
Yeah, but also, it's kind of like a little mini truck kind of, but it's quite narrow so that it can go on a cycle lane. And this is becoming quite common. And so Kale.ai is trying to be kind of the routing service for these vehicles, I guess.
Okay.
Nice. Which, you know, I don't know how that's going, but very interesting talk about, you know, about what they discovered. And they're doing all this only with OpenStreetMap data. Okay. And so what they, one interesting insight was that the speed with which a driver can move, a cyclist can move, depends heavily on the surface. You know, if it's like cobblestones, right, they're going to go much slower than if it's like asphalt and things like that. So, all of that data is in OpenStreetMap. So, so that was an interesting talk. But
the one I liked that I've got to call out without knowing anything about what he actually spoke of is Harald Kortke.
Harald Kortke, yes, this was the first talk. This is exactly what I was about to transition to, which was also about routing.
What can you build with 512K of memory? And I would have said sweet Fanny Adams, but I think I'm wrong.
No, you are wrong. So Harald has been around for a while, has a long, distinguished career, and he actually first started working on routing in the 90s, and he built a routing service on a Palm Pilot. Do you remember the original Palm Pilot?
I had one.
Okay. And so he talked about this project. I mean, the project was, you know, 30 years ago, but he talked about it and he had a very good, interesting video showing of actually using it, you know, with like the little stylus having to type in the thing. And it was a very interesting throwback because, I mean, he made the one point at the beginning of the talk. I mean, the amount of memory on this device is less than some GIFs now, you know, like these animated GIFs. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And it showed, it really did make you realize how far we've come, you know. But the other point that was interesting, though, is that, you know, of course, from the interface and the speed and the fact that using real-time data, you know, we've come a long, long way. But many of the core concepts were still quite, were you know, exist the exact same as back then. So that was a fascinating talk. Let me quickly bring up the list here because I'm kind of blanking on some of the other talks that we had. But we did have a talk from someone at here let me just get the guy's name. He talked about not exactly routing, but in some ways similar in that they're trying to do kind of thinking about electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. So in electric vehicles, obviously you have the issue of where am I going to charge, and trying to think about, you know, how to build tools to help people solve that, not only from the point of view of the driver, but also from the point of view of the venue, in the sense of, like, you know, a grocery store might say, let's put in some charging stations, and that way we can, you know, help attract customers. And, but, you know, I personally don't have a car at all. So, but, and I definitely don't have an electric car, but, you know, there are different types of charging stations in terms of, like, is it quick charging or slower, and you know, how much it costs and things like that. And so they're trying to, you know, he had a project to kind of think about the logic of how to advise people based on their customer mix, which type of charging they should be pushing and promoting. And that was an interesting talk. I skipped over one talk. Before that, though, we had a talk from Alana, who is, she works actually at Planet, which is one of the big geospatial firms in Berlin. But her talk was not so much about Planet, but it was just about maps in general and her personal love of maps. Also kind of the history of maps. She had a lot of pictures of kind of very old maps. And I don't mean even, she showed us this one thing, which they, she claimed is the oldest known map. It's kind of a carving on a bone that they found in like a Stone Age, in a cave or something. And they think, I think in what is currently the Czech Republic, and this thing is estimated to be 25,000 years old. And they've kind of interpreted the carving to represent kind of the local geography of that area. And you know, what's fascinating about that, Stephen, which I had never really reflected upon, but so this map in some form of map, it was 25,000 years old. And writing systems are only like 2,000 or 3,000 years old.
Right.
I guess 2,000 or 3,000 before Christ. So 5,000 years old. Anyway, maps are much older than writing, is the point. Which I hadn't really considered before. Anyway, very good talk, very enthusiastic talk. She, it wasn't particularly anything new, but just, you know, a lot of enthusiasm about why maps are great. And she actually did then win the best speaker prize, I should note. Finally, we did have my good friend Muthu, who of course runs Geo Awesomeness, but on his day job, he works at the OGC.
Yep.
So, who we're very fortunate to have as a sponsor. And for a long time, I've been telling him, look, you guys got to come tell us, what is the OGC? Very similar to the talk that we had in London a couple of weeks ago. And basically just kind of reiterating, what is the OGC doing? Why is this exciting? Why, you know, even if it isn't exciting, why are standards so critical for us to be able to work together? And you know what's interesting? I mean, he just recently started at the OGC. He previously had worked at Deutsche Bahn. And he kind of talked also about why he made this switch, why he got excited about it, and about the how the standards provide kind of, you know, really the foundational layer that for all of us to build upon. So that was a good talk. And then we were off to the pub. I mean, here we're very fortunate. There's a pub, you know, 2 minutes away. And it was a great night. One thing that was particularly fun is at here they have a very strong cohort of, students or interns, you know, who are doing kind of a semester or a year or a project at here. So that crew was pretty lively at the pub, as well they should be. And it was fun. It was great. So
great.
Very good turnout.
I'm definitely going to have to come for one of these, aren't I?
Well, the next Berlin event is end of February, February 25th. We will be at the offices of Up42, which you interviewed
Sean.
Sean, yes. So yeah. I'm hopeful he'll be there. I assume he'll be there.
And I think Sean was at here before he went to Up42.
Yes, it is. It is a little bit I guess incestuous in the Berlin community. There are several people who've worked at here and Planet, and then kind of now we have these startups. There's a lot of Earth observation stuff. Obviously, UP42 is in that space. So I get it in the calendar and let's go.
Okay.
And then I was off to Barcelona. So I guess 2 weeks later, 2 weeks after that, we had Barcelona, which, as listeners will know, longtime listeners will know, we have struggled a bit in Barcelona to get the same momentum that we have, say, in London or Berlin. But this time it actually really worked out. We went from, in the beginning, I was like, I don't even know if we should do an event or, let's see who we can speak. And all of a sudden we got 5 very good speakers. So actually it did turn out great. I can quickly go through this. One thing that's very interesting, our first speaker, Matteo, who actually won the best speaker prize, he works at a company called a Lane Patrol. And again, the similar type thing of, assessing the bike infrastructure in cities. They kind of are more of like a consultancy for cities or local government about how they can improve the cycle infrastructure. And where they should improve the cycle infrastructure, given if you have a limited budget, where should you spend that money and what are the most unsafe places? And right now this is, a lot of this is done kind of an ad hoc way, whereas they try to do it much more with a true data approach, also heavily relying on OpenStreetMap, but also kind of image capture, having people ride around with cameras and then analyzing those images and breaking down, I don't know. It was just that this brought together several threads. On the one hand, we had in Berlin, we have a company working on OSM cycle data. And then, as you may recall, prior to that, we had in London, we had Dustin with AB Street using OSM for traffic planning. And like this Lane Patrol is kind of the combination of those two, because you use, city planners can then use their data to try to decide, okay, what happens if we put in a cycle lane here, or, should we spend the budget to fix the cycle infrastructure here? Very interesting project. And very interesting that I kind of get the feeling that OSM, at least in some European cities, has become core infrastructure to a degree.
I agree. And I was just about to say, that you just gave 3 examples, Justin at A to B, Lane Patrol and the one in Berlin. And like, it seems that everybody who is working on cycling related mobility stuff is using OpenStreetMap. Anybody, and I can't think of anybody who's focused on cycling or to a large extent focused on walking who's not using OpenStreetMap. I know you can get walking routes in Google Maps or something, but specialist walking, cycling things are all being done in OpenStreetMap. I mean, it really is the mammoth in that, the giant in that.
So it seems. Actually, at the next GeoMob in Berlin, we are going to have a talk by Dave Whittingham, who... he spoke several years ago about his about Kreuzungen, his project where he took Strava data for long distance cyclists and then extracted out every body of water you went over and things. Anyway, he's a very passionate cyclist, particularly these kind of long distance races and events and things like that. And so he is working on some sort of service to address that community, of course using OSM. So I'm looking forward to that talk.
I just wonder, Ed, how, you hear about these projects in Berlin, in Barcelona, there's bound to be one in London somewhere, and they're all using this data, but how consistently can the algorithms or software that they're developing be applied across multiple cities in different countries? Because I think
This is a good question. And actually, afterwards at the pub, I talked with Mateo from Lane Patrol, and I was like, look, have you heard of AB Street? Have you heard of Kale? And he had never heard of either.
No.
And so afterwards, I made sure I sent him the URLs and things. You do wonder if there's some duplication of whether this is additive or it's competitive, kind of, to a degree.
Well, and also whether, you know, if you're working on optimizing for bicycle couriers, right, you really want to be able to do that in New York, in London, in Barcelona, in Berlin, in Paris, right? And you need your data to look pretty much the same in all of those cities.
Yeah, so you need everyone to tag it the same in OpenStreetMap,
right? God forbid,
right?
God forbid.
Which is not always easy. That being said, I will say, I do feel like there has been, you know, we're 20 years into OpenStreetMap now, and people have, you know, for many core things like this, that there does seem to be kind of, certainly there are best practices, and most people follow them.
Right.
And also, I think the editors, you know, are better at pushing users
into
the best practices. There are sometimes you do have, you know, country X, the community there does it this way, and then in country Y they do it a different way or whatever. But one would of course hope that all of this is additive and that people are working together. And
The German OpenStreetMap community is bound to be the first to map every individual paving stone.
I don't know about cycling. You know, there are a lot of passionate cyclists everywhere in the world. Not least Andy Allen, who started Open Cycle Map way back in the day. So I don't know. The problem with all this comes usually when you arrive in situations where countries are just totally different than anywhere else. You know, they have some sort of weird infrastructure that, you know, like, have you ever been, I doubt you would know this, but in the U.S., you know, it's very noticeable when you get to New Jersey, they have these things called jug handles. So there are no left turns.
Okay. Right.
Instead, you have to go to the right, and then you go to the right and you go kind of like around, and it's called a jug handle.
I can visualize it, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
So they have this weird intersection way of doing things, or, you know, like some countries have roundabouts everywhere, and other countries have no roundabouts. And so as a result, then people start tagging it differently, and it is different. So they tag it differently, and then you, once you go down that path, you start tagging things in weird ways. And anyway. Definitely something for us to keep an eye on in 2026, the OSM cycle infrastructure.
Dare I say it, that AI probably could look at tags and geometry and other things and identify tags which were broadly the same thing.
Yes. Well, I mean, you could also, obviously there's a huge discussion in the community of, you know, isn't the AI good? I mean, this is one thing that Lane Patrol does, is you have the human wears a camera as they ride the bike around. Obviously AI is very good at image recognition and could tell you what's a tag, or could even do it, right? So, you know, this is obviously a huge point of debate in the OSM community. Should we do that? Should we not do that? Should we, it sounds like a good idea until all of a sudden it's not a good idea, but nevertheless. Let's move on. We next had a talk from Noria, who she works on citizen science. So very, very similar to the work that Mookie does in London, which we've heard about before at GeoMap London, and basically just kind of a high-level overview of what is citizen science, why is citizen science so critical for science, and how that might be useful in the geographic context. And basically the core message is you know, for science to work, we need data. We need a lot of data. The more data we have, the closer we get to the reality. And by having citizens collecting that data, you know, we can improve the size of the data set. Even if each individual citizen, you know, people don't need to be trained scientists as long as they're capturing truthful data. Okay, our third talk though, Stephen, this was a fascinating talk. This was by a gentleman named Alex Lopez, who works at Indra Space, which is a big infrastructure company doing all kinds of things in the space field in Spain and other countries. But specifically, he works on a very hot topic, which is GPS jamming and GPS spoofing. What can we do about this? Obviously, it's a huge issue in the war in Russia. You know, people trying to jam the GPS. So, what do we do if the GPS gets turned off or is wrong or intentionally misleading so that the planes can't fly, the drones can't fly? This is a big, big thing. So he kind of gave us a very high level overview, obviously a 15-minute talk, but about some of the challenges there. And
when you talk about the challenges, are you saying, was he coming from the perspective that GPS interference or jamming was a bad thing or a good thing?
Bad. A bad thing. We're coming at it from the point of view of being a bad thing. So particularly, I mean, you know, there have now been cases where the Russians have cut off GPS for like commercial flights over the Baltics and things like that.
And that's a bad thing. Right?
Yeah. If I were on that plane, that would be a very bad thing. Yes.
Yeah. On the other hand, jamming GPS to prevent a missile or a drone from reaching its target might be a very good thing.
I guess that depends who fires the drone and who the target is, I guess.
Right. Well, if you're a Ukrainian and
you're... to be honest...
What I'm saying is it's, you know, there's two sides to this, you know, and...
Sure. But, Stephen, the jamming is one problem. The spoofing is another problem, where you think the GPS is working, but it's giving you wrong information, right? And you could well imagine that would be... have very bad consequences for commercial air flight, things like that. I think this will be a topic that we'll be exploring more. And actually, I recently had a call with someone, not at a GMO event, but someone who's working on systems of how you can determine, have a device that knows its location correctly without needing to rely on signal. Basically kind of much improved dead reckoning.
Inertia.
But obviously the sensors have gotten much better. And also you could do things like camera, image recognition. Imagine we upload all the images of a certain region and then we send the device on its way and it can locally on the device, do that kind of image recognition to try to establish where it is. Next, we had Maria Guzman, who I don't know if you know her, Steve. She's pretty active in the open source geo community and in the Spanish speaking community. But her day job is she works doing GIS at a company that works on kind of water hydrology, like the network and things like that, and they, I guess, are the kind of stewards of a project called GIS Water, which is a QGIS plugin for mapping these kind of, pipe networks and things like that. And so she kind of gave us an overview of that and some of the cool things they do there. To include, this was quite interesting, how they've kind of manipulated some of the tools used for routing of traffic, and they use them to kind of calculate the flow of water.
Okay.
So you can then imagine if I turn this pipe off, where is the water going to flow and where's that going to lead to a backfill and things like that.
Cool.
So that was cool. That's something I know very little about. You may be shocked to know, Stephen, my undergraduate degree is actually in civil and environmental engineering. Right. So I had to take an intro course to hydrology and this kind of thing. So brought back some memories. And then finally, we had Gerard, who works at GMV. So this is a large satellite operator. They operate satellites. They do all kinds of space stuff, and of course are quite heavily involved in all kinds of Earth observation. Unfortunately, one thing he didn't talk about, he talked more about Earth observation, but one thing that's very cool, if you go to their website, which I was hoping he would give us a talk about, is on their website, it talks about, you know, navigating in the solar system, you know, like from planet to planet, which he doesn't work in that group, which is kind of like, you know, we often have talks about kind of the last mile. We were joking, this would be like the first light year problem, you know, so... But anyway, very, very interesting talk all about the capabilities of some of the Earth observation stuff. And just,
can
you know,
you fly in straight lines in space?
That I don't know, but probably not.
Because gravity must sort of bend your...
Anyway, but he showed off for us some of the... you know, some of the Earth observation things, particularly, I mean, it's just insane how detailed these things can be, like being able to detect an oil spill, an oil leak from a boat, you know, at sea, being able to, like, of course, you know, not just obviously recognizing what's forest and what's cropland, but really like what type of crop and, you know, all of that, and using that to do all kinds of compliance with like farming subsidies and things like that. So, it remains kind of the stuff of science fiction, actually.
Yeah.
And to a degree, I think, you know, at a gym in Barcelona a year ago or so, we had this talk where the speaker kind of complained that the bottleneck in Earth observation is not what is technically possible. It's that potential customers can't even fathom what's possible, and thus they don't know to purchase it. So, so a lot of work still to be done there and to make it more mainstream. But anyway, it was five very good talks and a good crowd. And we then head to the pub and had a very fun night. So, you know, it's smaller than a Berlin or a London, but that also has its advantages because then you get to know everyone.
You get
to talk to everyone. So very fun evening. So,
and I'm just thinking, you know, you've gone through the last two events of the year and we've been chatting about some of the things they're doing. And, you know, we're living in it. You know, we can forget because we get so immersed in the detail that we're living in amazing times.
It's so true. That's
technology
so true.
Is just doing the most incredible things. You know, I mean, we take GPS for granted, right? I mean, we got a GPS. You know, the smart people know that we've got a GPS chip in our phones and that it just does this stuff. But what it's actually doing, you know, picking up signals from different satellites around the Earth. Working out from the timestamp how long they've taken to reach it, and so in theory, we get all this. You know, I mean, the geometry is fairly simple, but the fact that we're doing this on a telephone in our pockets is just, I mean, to me, it's still remarkable.
That is amazing, Steve. But and likewise, the flip side of that, I can well remember 20 years ago in London at the early days of OpenStreetMap, and you know, you would. We would kind of meet up and map things, and people are like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we had all this data and that data? And now we actually have the companies being built on, because the data is actually there.
Yeah.
The lane patrols and the Kale AIs and things like that. So, you know, that doesn't mean it's perfect and it's simple, but it is becoming viable.
Yeah.
So it's true. It's true, man. We I think this is maybe a good place to wrap it up and say, to recognize that we are in the golden age of geospatial, and it's going to continue in 2026.
Yeah, and if you can dream it, you can do it.
It's true. And not just that, Stephen, but we already have 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 GeoMob events in the calendar for 2026. So, everyone, you know, thank you for listening for the year, and let's get out to an event. We've got the Netherlands coming up back in Utrecht on 22nd of January. Then we've got Edinburgh keeping it going 27th of January. The very next night, we're going to be in London on the 28th of January. So free GeoMob sticker to anyone who makes it to both Edinburgh and London.
Oh, wow. That's an incentive.
And then in February, we've got Berlin. So possibly I'm sure we'll have a few more pop up on the calendar in the coming weeks. So
once again, thank you to everybody who's listened to us rambling on for the last year. Thanks to everyone who's come to one of our events in 10 or 12 different cities throughout the year. Have a great new year and see you the other side.
See you in 2026, everyone.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.